Blog Talk Radio.
In the desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I hope that you've had a good week so far. It's been a beautiful week here in Florissant weather-wise. Summer is definitely here, and the temperatures are getting a little bit hotter each day, and I love the summer heat. I love the adventure of summer. And part of my job at work is working outside, so I enjoy that a lot. Well, today on The Cross in the Desert, I want to talk to you about a very, very controversial subject, but a very important subject. As all of us know, the Supreme Court has favored the implementation of some of the elements of the travel ban, and this is a ban for national security. And this strikes deeply at who I am as a Christian and as a voice for the Iranian people. Of course, Iran is one of those countries that is part of the ban, unless they have vested interest here in America, family ties, someone going to university, something like that. Unless they have that, they will be banned for the next 90 to 120 days. That is, someone that just wants to travel from Iran to the United States with no family ties, maybe as a tourist, they won't be able to do that. As I said, this strikes deeply at who I am because I have many Iranian friends, and some of them are very upset. They don't understand this. They think that we don't trust Iranians, etc. Well, but today on The Cross in the Desert, I'm going to get into this subject in some length. But what I want to say up front is that I agree with this ban. I believe President Trump has the best interests in our country. And when you look at what's happening all over the world, in the UK, in Manchester, when you see what happened here just recently, and then last year the attacks on San Bernardino and Orlando, he is taking seriously the threat that is happening to our nation. And as a good commander-in-chief, he is saying, look, we need to revamp and revisit this system. We need to do something about the vetting process to prevent this from ever happening again. And so it's only temporary. And it's something that needs to be done. It's very important. And I agree with the president that it is an appropriate decision. You know, the liberal left has done everything since his inauguration to delegitimize him, to destroy him with these fake stories about collusion with Russia. This is the first real victory the Trump administration has had. Now, of course, the justices will revisit this in the fall and talk at length and give opinions on the implementation of this going forward. But I believe it's the right decision. And I tell my Iranian friends it's only temporary. America is an immigrant nation. We are a land of pioneers and immigrants. And I want to talk about that with you in a few minutes about what is our biblical responsibility as a Christian nation toward immigrants and refugees. Well, there has been mixed reaction to the implementation of the travel ban. We're going to begin with those that live in Connecticut. Let's listen right now on the Cross in the Desert.
The contentious travel ban talked about in terminals after the Supreme Court ruling.
Had to start somewhere. A little adjustment was okay.
Refugees of all people. This is a country of refugees. This is how it started.
President Donald Trump's order blocked travel to the U.S. for 90 days by people from six predominantly Muslim countries: Iran, Syria, Libya, Yemen, Somalia, and Sudan. But the court declared that the government cannot ban people if they have a bona fide relationship with a person or entity in the United States. That includes family members of U.S. residents, students admitted to American schools, workers accepting jobs in the country. Analysts say this will predominantly impact refugees. The president called the ruling a victory, and some Bradley travelers agree.
We have to protect the country, and you got to start by keeping people that want to come here to do harm out of here. So, you know, you can never tell who's coming through here. Never.
Just doing what should have been done a long time ago, where we control who comes in, who goes out.
Those against the ban, like the Connecticut Chapter Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, issued a travel alert to anyone from those six countries to consult with an immigration attorney before traveling. They sent a statement that said, quote, "The ban on foreign nationals of the six Muslim-majority countries who do not have already close connections to our nation could create legal and humanitarian chaos. Travelers may be delayed or detained as immigration officials decide whether their connections to the United States are strong enough to justify entry."
It still seems kind of inhumane because the refugees need somewhere to go. There's a huge refugee crisis in the world, and we need to help people.
This country wasn't founded on travel bans. It was founded on freedom. Freedom of religion, freedom of passage, freedom of commerce. That's what we should embrace.
The ban would go into effect 72 hours after the court's decision, so the earliest this could be implemented would be Thursday. At Bradley International Airport, Stephanie Simone, News 8.
And, of course, there are various reactions all over the country. A lot of Muslims still see this as some kind of discrimination against them. And this travel ban is specifically against those nations, those countries that are terroristic in origin and that have really no ties to us. And it's only temporary because our system is going to be overhauled and our vetting process is going to be improved. So this is all about national security. It's got nothing to do with discrimination. The justices did not see it that way at all. The lower court liberals, who have no idea about anything in reality these days, are just involved in a political witch hunt against Trump. And so the justices of the Supreme Court saw it much differently. And thank God they have common sense and they care about our nation and our national security. Now, I want you to know specifically how this ban will affect immigrants and refugees. I want you to hear this short soundbite about that subject.
In the wake of the Supreme Court's decision Monday to partially lift injunctions against President Trump's travel ban, immigrant lawyers and refugee resettlement agencies are working to decipher how the partial ban will affect their clients. The Supreme Court agreed to hear the case after the Justice Department appealed injunctions against the ban, which were handed down from lower courts in Hawaii and Maryland. In the interim, the Supreme Court ruled that the ban should be reinstated for people who cannot prove a bona fide relationship with a person or entity in the United States. In doing so, the justices argued that the lower court decisions did not prove that temporarily banning people without a bona fide relationship in the U.S. would impose any legally relevant hardship. Immigration lawyers say the partially reinstated travel ban on citizens of six majority Muslim countries should not affect people with visas or who are coming to the U.S. for business, to visit family, or attend school. But what the requirement means for refugees who were banned from entering the U.S. under the March executive order is less clear, especially because the Department of Homeland Security has yet to issue any guidance on how customs and border protection agents should interpret and implement the bona fide relationship requirement. The National Immigration Law Center is still working with refugee resettlement partners to clarify whether clients who have already filed applications for refugee status will be affected.
I think the implementation of this ban is much more improved and better than it was originally back in January, February. And while there may be some issues with the bona fide relationship clause, it will all be worked out. Now, there is a significant Somalian population in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And so I want to take us there to get some reaction from those Somalian people who have family members living back in Somalia that perhaps wanted to travel to the U.S. Let's hear that soundbite right now on The Cross in the Desert.
Hello, thank you for joining us. Fewer refugees will be coming to Minnesota in the next coming months.
The Supreme Court decided today to partially uphold a travel ban President Trump put into action earlier this year. The ban affects some people coming to the U.S. from Libya, Iran, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, all predominantly Muslim countries.
The president issued the executive order in January. However, federal courts initially reversed it. As of today, though, the Supreme Court announced most of the ban could be enacted until the court hears the case in October. Susan Elizabeth Littlefield is looking into how this ruling hit close to home for many Minnesotans.
Yeah, that's right, Frank. Of the 150,000 Somali immigrants who live in the U.S., more live in Minnesota than any other state. There are also immigrants from the other countries listed in the ban. The ban isn't as vast as the last one. So we talked with some immigrants here who are trying to figure out exactly who this one will affect.
Peppered with mosques, coffee shops, and a recognizable skyline, Cedar Riverside is home to many Somali immigrants.
This is my home. You know, this is where my kids are born. We're raising family. This is home.
A refugee in 1999, Muhammad Noor is now a proud Minnesotan. He spent the day trying to figure out who will be allowed to follow in his footsteps.
I think people may not know the details, including myself.
There are some sore memories from January when several families were kept apart.
That stopped everybody on their tracks. That created more confusion, which, you know, people didn't know what it is.
These were some of the reunions at MSP when federal courts reversed the ban. Unlike the last more far-reaching ban, with the latest ban, visitors from these six countries who have a bona fide family or business relationship with someone in the U.S. can still visit.
It doesn't look like as big as a deal as it was, but it's more about who is going to be impacted the most.
It appears refugees who come alone, as he did, will have to postpone the dream.
And unfortunately, refugees are people who are actually running away from a situation to come find a better life. And those are the ones who are impacted the most.
President Trump called the Supreme Court's decision, quote, a clear victory for our national security. Details are still not firm, but this partial ban, it could be back in place as soon as 72 hours from now.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye and see how things get implemented. Thanks, Susan Elizabeth.
Yes, it is all about national security. I think in the last month or more, I think all of us have been horrified at the escalation of attacks, especially in the UK. And Europe is a model for us. When I had Scott Pressler on the program from Act for America last Thursday, in fact, he talked about when you take a look at Europe and you see the carnage, you see the death and destruction from terrorist attacks, then you understand why we here as citizens are marching against Sharia law. And also, in the same vein, why we have to do this with the travel ban. One of the platforms that President Trump ran on was national security and legal immigrants, and he is doing what he said he was going to do. He is keeping his promise, and thank God we have a president that cares about the safety and security of our country. But with that in mind, I want to talk to you about an issue that is near and dear to my heart. You know I work with Iranian refugees. I write their stories. I write letters to the immigration board. I do what I can do to encourage them on their journey to freedom. And so refugees are just near and dear to my heart. And yet I agree with this ban in principle for our national securities because I know it's only temporary and it will pass. And it will be a better situation for all of us once this vetting process is improved and once we become much more knowledgeable about the terrorist acts in the world and how to prevent them from coming to our country. But what is our Christian responsibility toward immigrants and refugees? We are a Christian nation, and we're founded upon biblical principles. And I want to talk about this a little bit with you this morning and share with you what the Bible says about our responsibility. This is actually taken from a CBN News article about 6 months ago, but it's very important that you hear what it is we as Christians have an obligation or responsibility toward refugees. Well, number one, we are to treat refugees the way that we want to be treated. Back in the Old Testament, in Leviticus chapter 19, verse 33, God says, "When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt." And so God is very clear here. Remember, Israelites, when you were in bondage in Egypt, remember that and do the same to those that are now foreigners in your land. Show them kindness and respect. Number two, provide food for the needy and the foreigner. And this is from, again, the book of Leviticus chapter 19. "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner." So we are to be kind, respectful, and provide food for the foreigner. Number three, we should love foreigners. After all, God does too. He defends the cause of the fatherless and widow and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. Deuteronomy chapter 10. Again, God is reminding his children, the children of Israel, remember your captivity in Egypt and how I brought you out with mighty miracles and great power. Now, the foreigner that comes into your land, remember your captivity and remember where you came from and treat them with kindness and respect. Number four, do not abuse foreigners. Do not oppress a foreigner. You yourself know how it feels to be foreigners because you were foreigners in Egypt. God is always reminding us about our former state. Number five, fight for justice for foreigners living among you. Malachi chapter 3, verse 5 says, "So I will come to put you on trial. I will be quick to testify against sorcerers, adulterers, and perjurers, against those who defraud laborers of their wage, who oppress the widow and the fatherless, and deprive the foreigners among you of justice. But do not fear me, says the Lord Almighty." And so again, be just toward the foreigners. Number six, oh, to the traveler. This is very specific. Job chapter 31. "No stranger had to spend the night in the street, for my door was always open to the traveler," says Job. Number seven, invite the stranger in. These are the words of Jesus. "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Matthew chapter 25, verse 25 through 36. These are the words of Jesus, how we treat the immigrant, the refugee, the foreigner. We are to treat them as we were to treat Christ himself and to show them love, compassion, to provide for them. Number 8, love your neighbor. For the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. And who is your neighbor? Well, very clearly, the stranger, the foreigner, the refugee, and the immigrant. I want to tell you about an incredible worship artist. Her name is Audrey Assad, and she has a story to tell. We're going to hear her music in just a minute. But she is the daughter of an Assyrian immigrant, a Syrian immigrant, Syrian refugee's daughter. Her father was a Syrian refugee, and she talks about her father in light of this travel ban. She says, my father came to this country in 1973 with his mother and two siblings. They overcame many hardships to do so, among them homelessness, divorce, and a secret escape by my grandfather over Syria's borders to Lebanon, where they petitioned for refugee status and then were brought to the United States. My father, Roy Assad, was a sponsored child through a church program in Syria, and the man who had been sending money every month in my dad's name was one of their only contacts when they arrived. He eventually employed my dad and gave him his start in the insurance business, in which my father still works today, over 40 years later. Their story is rich and textured and provides a backdrop to my childhood that irrevocably shaped me, my ministry, and my worldview. Now, Audrey goes on to say, she was asked the question, what do you say to Americans who are concerned about the high number of Muslim refugees, whether from Syria or elsewhere, coming here? And Audrey says, I am who I am, and I do what I do in large part due to my father, his heritage, and his immigration here under Dur. If we shut out Arabs, whose voice and gifts and brilliance we will be missing out on because of fears about our security. I understand that people are afraid of terrorists slipping through as refugees, and I think it would probably allay someone's fears if they researched the process by which we vet refugees who come here. It's very robust, Audrey says. Ultimately, especially for American Christians, I keep coming back to the thought that the Bible commands us to be hospitable to foreigners, plain and simple. National security is not a kingdom value, but hospitality is. Amos chapter 5 says, religion is a stench to God. If justice for the poor is not a priority to us, it angers God. I take that very, very seriously, and I think God will bless those who open their hearts and or their homes to people who have lost everything and who find themselves on a strange soil in a country full of people who don't trust them because of their ethnicity or religion and hope. We pray every day that Americans would be softened toward the Syrians. I wouldn't be here if they hadn't welcomed my father. And that's Audrey Assad. She has a lot of good to say. And yes, she's right about our responsibility that we should open up our homes and hearts. And I think that the fair and balanced response to all of this morning is that, number one, we are a Christian nation. We have a commitment to immigrants and refugees. And I am very pro-refugee, being a voice for Iranians. In saying that, though, we also have a responsibility to each other for national security. And if that means a pause in the process to improve our vetting, to make our country safer and make it even safer for the refugees who come in, if a pause in the process means that we need to find ways to seal the cracks in the systems so that ISIS can't be smuggled in as refugees, if it means a pause in the system, I agree with it. For national security's sake, we must do this. That doesn't mean we're closing our heart to refugees. Not at all. In fact, we're going to make it even more improved and safer in the future. So I'm trying to give you that fair and balanced approach. It may not satisfy all of us. It may not answer all of your questions, but I support our president because he's doing the right thing. Now, I read to you Audrey Assad talking about her father as a Syrian refugee. And Audrey is a Christian artist. She writes wonderful worship songs, and she sings beautifully on the hymns of the church. I want you to hear this particular song that she wrote, I think, about a year and a half ago, in response to those Egyptian Christians who were publicly beheaded by ISIS. This song is very powerful. This is Audrey Assad, a song called Even Unto Death. Let's listen. Well, having a little problem here getting it to start. It doesn't want to start. How about that? So Audrey's song, no. We're going to make sure that starts. Wow. That is not working for me today. Here it goes.
Jesus, the very thought of you, it fills my heart with love. Jesus, you burn.
Even Unto Death, inspired by having seen a video that the Islamic State released of an execution in February of 2016. It was an execution of 21 Egyptian Coptic men.
Jesus, you are my only hope, and you my pride.
By that, I wrote a song sort of to adopt the prayers of the martyrs, because I don't feel like we should just be praying for them. I feel like we should be praying with them. And so Even Unto Death was my attempt at writing a song that prays with the martyrs.
Thank you.
The beautiful vocals of Audrey Assad, a song of tribute to the Egyptian Coptic Christians that were slaughtered on the beach about 2 years ago. We were all gripped by that video. But she felt a responsibility to be a voice for them, to not just pray for them, to pray with them. And this is a song called Even Unto Death. I like what Audrey says. Had we had not been a Christian nation that loved immigrants and refugees, had we had not opened the door for her father to come here and to live among us, we wouldn't be blessed with the talent we're listening to right now. And so an incredible story, a beautiful story. Well, this morning we've been talking about in the first hour the travel ban, the implications of the travel ban, how it will be worked out, the fact that the Supreme Court justices will revisit this issue in October, perhaps a little sooner, and will discuss among themselves and write opinions on the ramifications of it, how it can be implemented more, what it means for the future of immigrants and refugees, how this will all be worked out. But again, I hope that this has helped you understand this issue better. I hope that you understand where my heart is with this issue. And we can move on. We can move forward, and we can do something very positive for our immigration system. We can improve it. We can step up the vetting process. And again, bottom line for the implementation of this, national security is important. It does nothing to discriminate against those who want to come to our country. The Lady Liberty, the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor, stands as a stark reminder of who we are. And as long as you see that statue, then you know the heart of every American. And so that should answer those questions as well. I want to take us now to my favorite part of the program. For the last several weeks, it has been an honor to read to you my newest publication, Finding Hope and a Future, Maral's Journey to Freedom, which is the story of Maral when she was a refugee seeking asylum in Germany. And so I want you to hear this beautiful music bed for a couple of minutes, and then when it's over, I'll return and continue reading in my newest book, Finding Hope and a Future. See you in a couple of minutes. I want to welcome you to a live reading here on the Cross in the Desert of my book, Finding Hope and a Future, Maral's Journey to Freedom. And we are in the middle of Chapter 8. And let's continue. Early the next morning at 7 a.m., Maral and Parham were awakened to begin yet another bus journey further into Germany. It would be a short two-hour ride that would take them to a train station where they would meet a man who would give them food and lodging for the next several days. While on the bus, Maral and Parham were treated to a light breakfast of milk and biscuits. Maral's throat was improving, and her appetite was slowly returning to normal. Arriving in Germany safely had given her a renewed sense of hope that their journey was rapidly coming to an end. Departing from the bus, Maral and Parham quickly connected to the train bound for the city of Dusseldorf. It would be a long, 7-hour trip that would put them at their destination around 5 in the evening. Unfortunately, Maral and Parham were forced to share their cabin on the train with three young Arab boys. Maral was angry. She wanted to be alone, and the last thing she wanted was to be surrounded by Muslims for the entire journey. Besides desiring to relax and be alone, Maral was terrified. She felt unsafe. Feeling trapped, she retreated to the rear of the cabin next to the window. One of the young Arabic boys could sense that Maral was very uneasy. He had heard her complain about a sore throat and offered her a lozenge. Maral reluctantly accepted it and turned back, gazing at the window. One of the Arab boys was in the process of lighting up a cigarette when he was rebuked by the older one, who had offered Maral throat lozenges. During their long trip, the older Arabic boy shared his can of chicken with Maral and Parham. A few hours later, when Maral converted her chair into a bed to try and sleep, the three boys left the cabin and stood together in the corridor. It was a struggle for Maral to sleep. She would awake, coughing from the congestion. Concerned about her health, the older boy brought her a cup of tea to alleviate the coughing. Now wide awake and slowly sipping the hot tea, Maral's anger was melting away from the kindness and respect of the young Arabic boys. Her fears and frustrations had subsided. For the first time since she had left Iran, Maral had discovered Muslims who didn't act and behave like those she had encountered before. They were an exception to the rude and violent types she had met while living in Iran. The 7-hour train ride had been a wake-up call for Maral not to judge and lump all Muslims into the same category. The Arabic boys helped Maral and Parham with their backpacks as they departed the train at the airport in Dusseldorf. Standing on the platform, Maral called her brother Farshad on her cell phone, informing him that they had arrived. Farshad instructed her to wait for a man in a wheelchair who meet them there in an hour. Clicking off her cell phone, Maral and Parham found a bench near the train tracks and sat down to wait for Muhammad. Maral was awakened by the buzzing sound of a motor. She opened her eyes and was greeted by a man sitting in a motorized wheelchair. "Maral, Parham," the man said, struggling to speak in his broken English. Maral stood up and approached Muhammad in his wheelchair. She introduced herself in Arabic, and immediately he understood. Farshad had told her on the cell phone that Muhammad was originally from Iraq. He had served in Saddam Hussein's army and became crippled after he was injured in battle. He had been a resident of Germany for 20 years since 1995. After a few short introductions, they joined Muhammad for a one-hour train ride to his residence in the city of Dortmund. Maral was so excited to finally stay at a real home after suffering as a traveling refugee in buses, trains, and rubber boats for more than 2 months. Muhammad lived on the first level of his flat. The flat was equipped with a special ramp for his wheelchair. Entering through the front door, Maral's nose was treated to the wonderful smell of food being cooked. The TV was playing cartoons. Parham became extremely excited. He loved watching cartoons and had grown up with them in Iran. "Wow, Mom, look, cartoons," Parham exclaimed, quickly sitting down on the couch in front of the TV. Please sit down. Mohammed said, struggling through his broken English. Would you like a cup of coffee? He offered. Yes, thank you, Mohammed, Maral answered as she looked out the window and gazed down at the street below. A few hours later, Maral and Parham relaxed at the kitchen table and ate their first real meal in over 2 months. Mohammed had prepared Arabic food for them, pieces of steak ground up over a bed of spinach. Maral groaned with satisfaction, savoring every bite. After dinner, Mohammed showed Maral the washroom in the shower and the room that they would sleep in. Without wasting any time, Maral quickly removed the dirty, soiled, stained clothes she had worn from the many hours of traveling and stepped into a hot shower. The soothing stream of hot water splashing over her body was like heaven on earth to Maral. She closed her eyes and fully enjoyed every drop, every splash of soothing water pouring down over her body. It was the most ecstatic experience of her life. A real shower, real food, and a real bed to finally sleep in. After refreshing herself in a shower, Maral was introduced to Mohammed's neighbor, who acted as a translator for them. Now, for the first time since they met, Mohammed could easily understand exactly what Maral wanted to say to him. Edmund was an Armenian Christian who lived in Germany for more than 35 years. He was a tall man with white skin and short and curly black hair. They talked for more than an hour, and Edmund decided to leave, noticing Maral was very tired. There was only one bedroom in the flat that was equipped with a special bar for Mohammed to grab onto in order to safely get in bed. He brought two blankets for Maral and Parham and said goodnight to them. Tomorrow morning, I will take both of you shopping for new clothes, Mohammed promised as he guided his wheelchair back toward his bedroom. Maral lay down and covered up herself in a pink blanket. The cushion of the sofa bed was a welcome delight to the many nights of sleeping on the cold hard grounds in the jungles of Serbia. Her whole body relaxed in the wonderful comfort of a sofa bed in the safe city of Dusseldorf, thousands of miles from the terror and fear of Shiraz, Iran. She remembered the intense heat of the day and the freezing cold temperatures at night, the many nights without sleep, and the many days with very little food and water. Tonight, Maral was thankful to God. The warmth of the sofa bed and the tingling feeling of her muscles relaxing brought tears of joy to Maral's eyes. Thank you, God, for this warm bed. Thank you, God, for bringing Parham and me safely here to Germany. Please make our future safe together, Maral softly whispered to God, and then she closed her tired eyes. Chapter 9, Saying Goodbye to Mohammed. Maral sat up on the sofa bed and stretched. The early morning rays of the sun were beaming against the curtains of her window. It was the first relaxing night of sleep that Maral had experienced in a very long time. She felt refreshed and rejuvenated. Before arriving at Mohammed's flat, she had struggled to fall asleep in the tents of the refugee camps. But last night was like heaven to her. A wonderful warm shower experience and a relaxing night's sleep had put her in a good mood this morning. The house was quiet and serene this morning. Mohammed and Parham had left early to go shopping. Maral had the house all to herself. Reaching over to her purse, Maral grabbed her cell phone and clicked on WhatsApp to call her sister Farzane. You should see this cute little house, Maral exclaimed, bragging to her sister. How is this man? Is he friendly? You say he is Arabic. Is he good to you? Farzane nervously asked. Maral calmed down Farzane and reassured her that everything was okay. Mohammed is very kind. He has taken Parham shopping, and later on he promised to take me shopping also. Maral finished her conversation with Farzane and then carefully inspected Mohammed's flat. She wanted to repay his kindness, and suddenly an idea flashed through her mind. She would clean his house and surprise him when he returned home. Quickly changing clothes and tying her hair back, Baral opened a few closet doors and found some rags to dust with. Switching on the speaker of her phone, she found some Persian music to help her work and then began dusting the furniture in the living room. After dusting the furniture, Maral retreated to Muhammad's bedroom and made his bed. She picked up his dirty clothes from off of the floor and then found the laundry room. She put a load of clothes in and set the timer. Returning to the hall closet, Maral found some mops and a bucket and proceeded to clean the bathroom. Finally, after putting the clothes in the dryer, Maral relaxed back in the recliner chair and turned on the TV to watch cartoons. She hadn't cleaned house since the time she lived with Ali, only this time it had been a real joy to do housework for a man who showed real kindness and compassion. As Maral was drifting off to sleep after a busy morning of housework, suddenly Parham burst through the door, following behind Muhammad's motorized wheelchair. He entered the living room, dancing for joy and pointing down to his new pair of tan suede boots. "Look what Muhammad bought me!" Maral quickly got up and bent down, gazing at Parham's new boots. "Wow, they're so beautiful," Maral exclaimed, looking toward Muhammad. Parham handed his mother all of his new clothes, a pair of blue sports pants and a gray jacket. "I really like this," Parham shouted and smiled towards Muhammad. Muhammad parked his wheelchair in front of Maral and showed her what he had purchased for their dinner this evening. He handed her eggplant and meat. "Do you like it?" he asked. "Thank you, of course," Maral answered with a grateful smile. Muhammad immediately understood her approval despite their language barrier. Using his hands to communicate because he couldn't speak English well, Muhammad rubbed his hands over his stomach. Are hungry?" he blurted out the words. Maral laughed and shook her head. Then he laid his head against his hands to communicate with Maral again. "You sleep?" he stuttered out loud. Maral chuckled, understanding what Muhammad was trying to say. "Yes, yes," Maral shook her head. "I slept very well." A warm smile broke onto Muhammad's face. He drove his wheelchair into the kitchen and began preparing eggs and cheese for breakfast. Entering the bathroom, Maral began to wash up and prepare for breakfast. She turned on the faucet and then lowered her face down towards the cold water. Splashing the cold, soothing water across her face, she looked up in the mirror. This time, the face that she saw in the mirror was no longer dirty and wrinkled-looking. The dark circles had disappeared from underneath her eyes. The face in the mirror was much different this time. There was a glow of hope in her brown eyes. They were full of life again. Maral continued to cleanse her face and began humming a Persian song as she washed. The joy of life had returned to her soul. It seemed that the very long journey was almost over, and one day soon she would finally arrive at her permanent home in Germany. As soon as Maral stepped out from the bathroom, wiping her face with a towel, Muhammad was there to greet her. His face was aglow with a grateful smile. He nodded his head in approval. "Oh, you noticed the house was clean?" Maral excitedly asked. Muhammad acted as though he understood her question. He continued to nod his head with a warm smile. Then he motioned with his hands, rubbing his stomach, indicating that breakfast was ready. Maral put her arm around Muhammad and kissed him gently on his head. She finally had a good reason to have a real appetite. And we will pause there now in chapter 9, saying goodbye to Muhammad. I have some reflections on what I've just read you, and I think you probably know what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Here was a man who had an interesting history. He once served under Saddam Hussein in Iraq. He was injured, and now he is confined to a wheelchair, but he has found a way to still live, this motorized wheelchair. But what did he do? He took in refugees, and that's what my country is all about, the care for refugees. This morning, I've talked with you about this travel ban, and we went right into the reading of my book, and it talked about a situation that fits perfectly the theme of this morning's show. And I want to read to you again the words of Jesus in Matthew 25, after his return and setting up his kingdom. This is what he says, Matthew 25, 35, "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." And then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will answer him, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me." This is exactly what Muhammad did with Maral and Porham. He welcomed them as strangers, as refugees, into his little flat in Dortmund, Germany. He didn't know anything about them, only what Maral's brother had shared with him. And yet he trusted them. He welcomed them in. He fed them. He clothed them. He showed kindness and compassion to them. And this is what it's all about. As a Christian nation, we are a nation of foreigners, of immigrants. We're a nation of refugees. We're a nation of pioneers. So many thousands, perhaps millions, if not more, have come in to New York Harbor, looking up at the Statue of Liberty and being so thankful that they have come to a country where they can once again realize their hopes and dreams. And President Trump understands all of that. And that's why he wants to improve this system to make it safer not only for us, but for those refugees that come into our culture, assimilate, and become citizens. The last thing we need is another Europe. And if we ignore what's happening in the world, and we see the terrorist attacks, and we do nothing to prevent them here, in just a few years, we will be just like Europe, overrun by the radical Muslims, the fake refugees, and the foreigners who have not come to assimilate but to destroy. And so our president has said enough is enough. Something needs to be done. Well, how does that correspond with what I just read to you, though? What it says is that this country's greatness was founded not only by the pioneers who went out west, but also by the immigrants and the refugees who have come here with their dreams, with their hopes, and have made our country greater. And so we are definitely that kind of country. And just like Muhammad, we have welcomed in the sick, the hurting, the lost, the destitute, fleeing nations, just trying to destroy their lives. We have fed them. We have clothed them. We have helped them to realize their dreams. And so as I'm reading this story this morning in my book, Finding Hope in a Future, I want to say to my Iranian friends that this will pass. This travel ban will pass. It is only temporary. And very soon, there's going to be a better system to welcome you. Some of my Iranian friends think that they don't believe that we as Americans trust them. No, it's not that. There is the largest Iranian population in the world, really, here in the United States, in Los Angeles. I have good Iranian friends who have brought their parents here. And it's a great big population in LA. And these are Iranians fleeing the oppression of a dictatorship government. And so what I want to say to them is that your parents, your friends, are only temporarily blocked. And quickly, as this system is being reevaluated and fixed, one day soon, it will be open again to them. You see, we will never, ever shut the door to the immigrant and the refugee. Because if we do, we destroy who we are. We betray the Statue of Liberty in our harbor if we were to do that. And no, we're not closing the door. We're simply pausing to say, this has to be fixed. And once it's fixed, those countries that are on the ban will be welcome again. It's only temporary. And yes, there is some real hardship, and there is some real frustration in the meantime. I agree. But I support our president 100% because I want our nation to be safe again. I want our borders to be secure because, in very simple terms, if we don't, we become just like Europe. Today on The Cross in the Desert, in many ways, I've shared with you my heart and my reaction, which I call a fair and balanced response to the travel ban. And as I've shared this story from my new book, it reminds me of the incredible responsibility we have to those refugees, that we welcome those who want to live in a way that's honoring our Constitution, honoring our principles, and will assimilate. There are many, many peaceful Muslims who live here who do obey our Constitution, many of them. It's the radicals that we're trying to keep out, and that's why we're pausing this, to do our best to put a halt to any more terrorist attacks in our country. So I want to thank you today, Ava, so much for coming by and spending your evening with me. It's always a delight to see you. You're a good friend, Ava. Thank you so much. God bless you. I want to thank anyone who's listened to this broadcast today. Thank you so much for spending this time with me. Next Monday will be a brand new show on The Cross in the Desert. And so I will see you soon again. Have a great weekend. Great.